Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Welcome to today's Football Times from These Football Times, Skeleton Crew Special, Bank Holiday Monday. So we're scratching around for, you know, there's A&E, the stories of A&E, walk-in centres, people out travelling, Stu's got to get to games of football at the end of the country for Wednesday. It's all going off. We've got injuries galore. So yes, we're down to the bare bones. It's me and Dave Bowler. Welcome, Dave.
Good afternoon, the five-a-side team. What's left?
The five-a-side team. We are definitely manning the desk as best we can here. Dave, bring us your first topic for today.
Well, it all goes back to last week and Tottenham's bruising afternoon at St James's Park, which required the Tottenham players to reimburse the supporters for their trials and tribulations in going up the country, watching the team get hammered, which I always thought was just a part of the footballing experience, to be perfectly honest. I mean, I think we've all been there, you know, we've all, perhaps not Liverpool, I don't know, but certainly at West Brom, we've been to many parts of the country and seen the team be absolutely abject and get hammered. And I'm not really sure quite what I think of this refunding business. I mean, I know football is an incredibly expensive game now, just the tickets and the travelling and God knows what else, and with the state of the economy and the cost of living and everything else, I can understand people getting really wound up and irritated by their team turning up and being utterly dreadful. But at the same time, that's kind of like taking a shirt back to Next or Marks and Spencer's or something. I mean, none of us like being customers. As football fans, you know, we don't like this idea that our clubs treat us as customers in the same way that Sainsbury's or Tesco's do. But if you're going to start complaining that you've had a substandard product, then that's kind of, you know, that is like taking something back that you don't like to a shop. I don't know. I feel sympathy for the Spurs fans, and of course, they could have been doing it again yesterday, given the way things started at Anfield. But at the same time, it's kind of what you sign up for as a football supporter, I think. I'm not sure about this business of handing the money back like that. What I do think it would be a good idea was if football clubs would subsidise all the way travel, which I know one or two clubs got into the business of doing at one point. They could certainly do that. The refund idea, I'm not convinced, I have to say.
No, I think what you need is tickets coming with a bit of a health warning. You know, there are no guarantees of a good time being had here. You know, I think even as a Liverpool supporter, you know, I've seen some abject performances after long, long away trips. I can remember a particularly poor performance at Fratton Park one time, and it's kind of it's life affirming more than anything else. If you do a long road trip to somewhere at the other end of the country to see a very poor game of football, a very poor performance by your own team, then you know what, we've had, I can remember, you know, many a game where, you know, we will still hark back to those. Oh, do you remember that terrible day at Stamford Bridge? And, you know, we ended up kind of like, you know, there was a crash on the M1, so we had to come off and all that. We ended up going through Woburn Safari Park over the cattle grids with kind of like a load of coaches because they thought we knew where we were going. So, yeah, and stuff like that. You know, the trips that have ended up in the middle of nowhere, like the Blair Witch Project and stuff like that, as we try and figure out where we're going. You know, they're all kind of like character building. You know, yeah. I think getting, you know, going down the road of refunds for kind of like poor performances, you know, it's where do you draw the line? You know, can we all have a rebate for kind of like poor performances? You know, for especially those of us who've been clicking through turnstiles for 40 odd years or so.
It's paying your dues, isn't it, really? Going and watching your team being terrible and getting
it's a badge of honour. It's a bit like undertaking a long League Cup midweek trip somewhere. You know, they're the ones that kind of really stamp your passport as kind of like being kind of like in for the ride, I think. But yeah, I can understand Tottenham's frustrations. I mean, I was at Anfield yesterday and there were a few, you know, noticeable gaps in the in the away section at 3-0 down at 15 minutes as they drifted off. And it wasn't, you know, huge, vast quantities of them, but you could see kind of like, you know, a good dozen or so all kind of like drifted out and, you know, all at once as if it was a stag do or something, thinking, right, let's just go and get pissed instead. But, you know, you go and do that type of thing. I mean, I go even harking back to Istanbul, you know, the stories of people who went at half time thinking, you know, more for you. And within that, the other end of the spectrum at 3, you know, Tottenham coming back at 3-3, there were a few around me that kind of like decided to scarper as soon as that third goal went in. And within that, they've missed one of the moments of the season as Lucas Moura plays a lovely cushion pass to lay in Diogo Jota for the winning goal. You know, you miss too much. You know, you've got to ride the waves, basically.
The refund business, I mean, as you say, where does it end? I mean, if you're a Southampton fan who look like they're now going to get relegated to the Championship, I mean, I know they may win the last four or five games and survive or whatever, but at the minute they look like they're going down. You ask for a refund for your season ticket because you've had a clearly terrible season and you've been rubbish. I mean, I don't know where that business stops. I think you can hurl as much abuse as you like at the players and say, you know, you're not fit to wear the shirt and all that kind of stuff. I think that's all fair game. And, you know, you might want to reconsider whether you go to the next game or you renew your season ticket or that kind of thing. But I think the idea that just because they've played rubbish one day, you get your money back, I'm not sure. And I saw something on Twitter. There was a Newcastle fan saying, well, this isn't taking us very seriously, is it? That Spurs should be able to come up to St James's Park and beat us. You know, here we are in the race for the Champions League. We happened to be quite a good side and we turned them over on the day. And I think that's a fair point as well from Newcastle's perspective.
It is. It's not like they've gone out to the FA Cup or something to a fourth division side or, you know, whatever it is. Yeah, definitely kind of like a peculiar turn. I get where it comes from, though. Football clubs are wanting to appear warm and cuddly and not these megaliths that are just kind of like hoovering up your bank accounts. It is a piece of toffee to chew. We'll give you the money back for a poor performance. It's an oddity, and I think there's a lot of underlying issues at Tottenham in that respect. And you know, the Spurs fans yesterday at Anfield Road were chanting "Levy out," and you know, there's clear unsettled nature amongst the Spurs fans, and I totally get it, that frustration, especially seeing Arsenal. You know, they're gonna miss out, but they're gonna miss out having played some pretty good football and giving it a good turn this season. So yeah, Tottenham. But yeah, no, fully agree on that that basis of getting your refund. West Brom must owe you a bit there, Dave.
I've had 25 years of my life, I think. I don't know. No, absolutely. I mean, you know, we've all been to. I remember going to Chelsea on the opening day of the season after they'd just got promoted. Di Matteo was the manager. Lost 6-0. They were absolutely abject. First day of the season as well, which is never a promising sign, although they went on and had a decent year that year. But I don't think, you know, if we're going to start getting into the business of saying we want our money back and we, you know, you've got to do this, that and the other, we can't then complain when they do treat us as customers in the same way as a Marks and Spencers or a Next or a Tesco's or whatever it is. There's a lot of things wrong with the idea of blind faith as a supporter, but equally, that's what makes football different. That's what makes it the game that it is. That's what makes football supporters who we are, isn't it? You know, I mean, that as you say, that those days that are absolutely dreadful, and then you'll get an amazing four. Like Albion at West Ham when they were 3-0 down after about 25 minutes, came back and won 4-3. You know, that's the payoff, isn't it? You've paid your dues, and then one week you'll get that back. It's
experiencing that whole spectrum of football emotion within that. You know, it's that terrible away day. It's that capitulation at home to a team that you should see off easily. Yet at the other end of the spectrum, it's the huge win at your biggest rivals or that last minute winner. That just lifts the soul, and you know, they go hand in hand with each other, and every other shade in between. You know, what are we gonna have next? No TripAdvisor, ratings, and and all that on the internet. You know, I was disgusted with the trip to wherever, to X, Y, and Z.
It is an interesting thing, though. I mean, in terms of, I suppose it's something to do with the relationship supporters have with their team and their club, and there always seem increasingly it's always the manager that's at fault. Sack the manager, and that's kind of result. And I know players do get a bit of stick, and obviously, you know, we've talked about racism and stuff in recent weeks as well, which is, you know, a completely different thing. But I often think that the players get off a bit lightly. You know, it always seems to be the manager who carries the can. And you look at Tottenham yesterday, and they've come back, and all they're interested in is celebrating the fact that they've equalised, and they forget that there's still another 90 seconds to go. And I mean, you know, I'm a great fan of Spurs. I've written books about 3 Spurs players over the years, in one time or another. I've always had a soft spot for Spurs, but there's nothing more Spursy than equalising in the last seconds and then still managing to lose somehow. I mean, that's been the last sort of 20 years of Tottenham, hasn't it, really? And coming back to what we said last week in the podcast, I think Conte was right about the players that they've got. They're soft, and there's a bit of selfishness about them. And Richarlison was too busy worrying about celebrating than he was about thinking, right, okay, back into the shape for 2 minutes, and we had another fantastic recovery draw, like we did last week at Manchester United. That's what the supporters really want. Not your money back. They want to see the team getting the results, I think. You know, that's more important.
Oh, completely. You know, it's very much, you know, results orientated. It's the way that, you know, even when you find your team kind of like struggling against something, you know, it's that microcosm of one game, you know, can change so much. And, you know, it's just the uplift and the down drop of kind of like football emotions and the forks in the road, as we often speak of. You know, but for Tottenham yesterday, that was one of the most Tottenham things I have ever seen. You know, Richarlison climbed for the bench, the former Everton player. You know, he's shushing the crowd. He's doing his chicken dance, and, you know, he's been booked for taking his shirt off. Someone put up a cracking stat yesterday that he'd been booked for taking his shirt off more than he'd actually scored, because he'd done it earlier in the season, only to have a goal disallowed. And there was a red card involved in something as well at one point. So, yeah, more red cards and yellow cards for disallowed goals than actual goals scored. Which is such an odd, because he is a cracking player.
But he was,
I think, still basking in his own magnificence when the ball was rolled past Fraser-Foster. But yeah, you know, Tottenham is a 2022-23 entity, Dave. It's been a hell of a ride, really.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? I mean, you know, that they are still there on the fringes of potentially the top four, and it's unlikely they'll get it. They might not even qualify for Europe in the end. And again, that is such a Tottenham kind of thing, isn't it? Because I mean, at times they've looked a really decent team.
When they play, because even yesterday, you look at how well they played from 3-0 down, abject in defending for the first 15 minutes, and then, you know, they were fantastic in going forward. But, you know, I mean, Jurgen Klopp mentioned it, you know, about how it's the counter-attacking side of them is fantastic, but there's more to football than just a counter-attacking side. You need to master, you know, the basics of defending and try and dominate games and stuff like that. But yeah, you know, I'm with you. You know, a lot of respect for Tottenham. I was in Madrid the night that we beat them in the Champions League final, and I can remember walking the streets of Madrid after that and seeing loads of white-shirted, you know, Tottenham supporters down on the ground, picking them up and saying, look, you know, you're doing the right things, and, you know, just keep moving the right direction, it'll come good. And within a year, Pochettino's gone, and the, you know, they're off on this journey that's brought them to this point, I think. You know, this is a team that's really kind of like, I don't know, they've shot themselves in the foot, basically, you know, over the last couple of seasons. But, you know, the potential is still there. They have a cracking set of players, but, you know, it's where they turn to for someone to be able to bring that together in a cohesive manner. The trick as well is not self-destructing in these circumstances. As a Liverpool supporter, I've seen us do that, you know, countless times in the Premier League era, is to come close to something tangible, miss out, and then within a year you've got rid of the manager, the manager's been driven away, and it's back to the drawing board. We did it with Roy Evans. Gerard Houllier, Rafa Benitez, Brendan Rodgers. They were all gone within. I think Houllier was the longest one in that respect, as he went to, from kind of like semi-challenging for 2001-2002 Premier League title to hanging on to his job until the summer of 2004. But, you know, Benitez was gone a year after, you know, a close shave in 2008-09. Rodgers within about 16 months of the 03-04 challenge. It's such a strange thing. So that propensity hits. In a way, it's kind of like a football club. I don't know, recovering from the broken heart, basically.
Yeah.
You know, I've been asked many times why Liverpool have been so disjointed this season. And my take on it isn't that they're necessarily poor individual players. Not, you know, you can't go from kind of like being on the brink of winning four or doing the quadruple to being, you know, the abject pits of the earth. You know, I mean, for me, it's, there's a lot to be said in the, I don't know, the argument that it's been a mental wall has been hit. They are physically drained. It takes a lot to be a Liverpool team under Jurgen Klopp. You know, and they've just, it's been a hangover season, basically. And the trick is riding out that hangover season and not hitting the self-destruct button. Spurs have had a hangover 2 or 3 years, really, 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, the problem with Spurs is they've had Mourinho, they've had Conte, we're not to the Tottenham supporters, Tottenham-type managers. And then they've changed, you know, relatively quickly with both of them for one reason or another. They obviously, you know, the fans would obviously like either Pochettino back or somebody of his ilk. And then you've got the Daniel Levy question of, you know, is he going to spend the right amount of money that they need to now go and close that gap again? I mean, this was, in a way, a real opportunity for him this season because, you know, Liverpool have been off the ball. Manchester United are still, you know, rebuilding under Ten Hag. There was that, you know, that's why Arsenal have come through, because the best teams in the ones that you would expect to be challenging haven't quite had it this season, and Arsenal have had that gap and they've come through. And as you say, that looks like they're going to fall short now, but they've had that chance. Spurs should have been in a better place to capitalise on it than Arsenal were, and one reason or another, they've blown up. But they've got to decide now what direction they take and what kind of manager they have. And I'm not sure that there's much clarity of thought there, to be honest.
No, it's the seeming lack of a plan, isn't it? You know, interim manager has been sacked to be replaced by another interim manager. You know, it does seem reactionary decisions without the compass having been set beforehand.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I'm same as you, though, in that massive respect for Tottenham. You know, grew up with Tottenham being, you know, a benchmark of stylish football, and, you know, Ardiles and Villa, you know, Archibald Hoddle, you know, huge respect for them. And, you know, even moving through the Premier League, it's such an oddity to think that it's now over 30 years since they've won anything other than the League Cup. You know, but to have, I don't know, so many missed opportunities as well. You know, a glut of FA Cup semi-finals lost. There's been, I know, 2015-16 when Leicester won the title. You know, it was Tottenham's golden opportunity, you know, a Champions League final there. It's not been for the want of that little kind of window of opportunity being there. They've just not been able to climb through it. But yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see where they go next, and whether it's more of the same, or whether they can find someone to roll back to the kind of that the promising era of Pochettino before that unraveled. Moving on to the next topic, Napoli were it's all set to wrap up the Serie A title yesterday afternoon. All the stars were aligned. Lazio had lost to Inter. All they needed to do was defeat local rival Salernitana. 1-0 up. Less than 10 minutes to go, and Salernitana have snatched a very, very good equaliser. Finally taken goal by Boulay Dia, who has played really well for them this season. He's been, Salernitana have been an interesting concept to watch this season. You know, they hit the panic button and sat their manager in February, replaced him with Paulo Sousa, who, I don't know, has had a kind of an intriguing managerial odyssey that's taken in QPR, Swansea, Leicester, Videoton, Maccabi Haifa, sorry, Maccabi Tel Aviv, Basel, Fiorentina. He's been to China. I'm not even going to try and pronounce the club that he managed. Bordeaux, Poland, Flamengo. You know, it's a huge kind of arc and span of clubs that he's managed. But he's come in, he's had 10 games in charge. They lost the first one against Lazio. And then they've been unbeaten since. They've only won two of those next nine. They've drawn seven. But they've rumbled along and you know moved themselves to comparative safety. They're looking very, very secure. They don't concede too many goals. Clean sheets are hard to come by. He's still procured three in the last nine games, which isn't so bad. They've picked out some cracking results. The wins have come against Monza and Sassuolo, two teams who can turn it on when they really, really want to. But, you know, he's picked up draws against Milan, away to Milan, you know, at home to Inter. And then on Sunday at Napoli, a result that was celebrated in the away dressing room as if they had won the title. They were absolutely delighted not to be the punchline to Napoli's title clinching day. You know, it's only a matter of time. It'll probably happen this midweek, maybe even before they kick a ball. They're due to play Udinese on Thursday night. So yeah, it's coming, but you know, it was interesting that Salernitana put a stop to her. You know, interesting set of players there as well. Kondreva, who Sampdoria player who allowed out on loan. He's a veteran Italian international, 36 now. It's, you know, Samp have clearly turned around and thought, you know, you're not going to be able to help us anymore. But you know, he scored seven goals for them last season. Probably crucial, absolutely crucial in them staying up. And it's no surprise, or it shouldn't be seen as a surprise, that there's Salernitana staying afloat, and there's Sampdoria heading towards Serie B, and maybe even further down if they go bang. Dia, Parola, they've Koulibaly, they've brought this collection of players together, loan players, players with something to prove, and sometimes that it's a fertile ground for a club like that, to be able to bring a set of players together who have a lot of skill, a lot in the tank still to give. And it's been great to see Salernitana, prosper. I mean, this is only the second season back up in Serie A. When they came up for last season, it was the first time since 1999 that they've been in Serie A. This is just their fourth season, I think, overall of Serie A football. This is a huge achievement, and I'm glad they've not ended up as the punchline to Napoli's title clinching day. I'm delighted that Napoli are going to win the title, but yeah, glad it's not Salernitana that's on the end of that punchline. Dave, Naples all set to party yesterday, and then they all had to go home.
It's amazing, isn't it? For so many teams who have dominant seasons, it's just that getting over the line is just the hardest thing. They're there, and then they sort of stumble through the tape at the finish. I mean, that it happens all over the place. I feel a bit sorry for Napoli that, they might... It always seems an anticlimax if you win the league and you haven't played. So I hope that Lazio win on Wednesday night, I think. Yeah. Napoli, and then at least Napoli have to go and do it and get the point that they need at Udinese. At least they're on the pitch and they achieve it that way. I mean, the Salernitana thing, they remind me... the way you're talking about the place, they remind me a bit in English terms of the old... Laurie McMenemy, Southampton, when he assembled the likes of Peter Osgood and Jim McCalliog and Peter Rodriguez and that kind of bunch to have one last sort of hurrah, because they'd all been rejected or passed over as being too old or whatever by various clubs. And then, they went on and they won the cup and they got promoted and stuff. But Paulo Sousa, I mean, he's always been a manager I've always quite liked, whenever I've sort of come across him. There's a sort of a different view necessarily, I think, among some English clubs about him. I mean, they see him as a kind of a negative manager. I'm not entirely sure that's true. I think he was a bit of ahead of his time in this country in that sense, because I think he always used to look to get hold of the ball and to dominate matches by possession, which, of course, is the thing that, has become the great story of the last sort of 10 years, hasn't it? But I suppose going back to, was it 2008, 2009, 2010 when he was over here? That was quite a different thing, and it was seen as a bit, this is a bit boring, this passing the ball around business and a bit dreary. And he became a bit of a draw specialist as well, which I think was a shame. I mean, had he had a proper striker at Swansea or QPR that was going to score a lot of goals, you know, a really big number of goals, then he might have been seen as a bigger figure in this country. But you know, he's one of those ones who quite often when a job comes up over here, I think, well, he could come back here and do quite a decent job for a team. But obviously, that's probably past now. But you were saying earlier before we came on air, he's one of those people that it needs to be in the right sort of culture for him to succeed. I think in England, it's all a bit, everything has to be too immediate, everything has to be hurry-scurry, everything has to be get the ball forward. It's changed, as I say, a bit over the last few years. But when he was here, I think he was a man out of place, really, going to somewhere like Italy. I think that, yeah, they understand what it is he's trying to do.
He's got that respect over there as well, hasn't he? I mean, not down in the football knowledge of the regular man or woman on the street, but you know, his playing career was magnificent. You know, Portuguese international, you know, Benfica, Sporting, Juventus, Borussia Dortmund, Inter. You know, he was a fine defensive midfielder. You know, and again, you know, I think being the defensive midfielder, being that strategician, you know, it's just being so strategic and having that being the technician of the team, basically, I think that comes through in his coaching career. You know, you say the draw, you know, as say the draw specialist, and there's a touch of that in his selling the town of the season. But even for kind of like, you know, seasoned Italian football watchers, when Sousa was handed the job at Salernitana back in February and started with a defeat against Lazio, you know, I think a lot were kind of like expecting the worst for Salernitana at that point in time, that, you know, Sousa was seen as a risky appointment, but he's proven anything but. You know, he's pulled something together there, and if you see, find the footage of the Salernitana players celebrating in the dressing room yesterday. You know, yes, it's a 1-1 draw against, you know, the big team of the area, but you know, it's just that utter delight at not, you know, being, you know, about managing to delay the party. You know, from the Napoli perspective as well, Spalletti's kind of, you know, brushed it off and said it's fine, kicking the can down the road for another game. It just means that we can enjoy the experience that little bit longer. You know, a great philosophical way of looking at it. You know, this man, you know, Spalletti, he's been, I don't know, he's kind of like the figure in Italian football that's well respected. And, you know, this point was, I think a lot of people had expected or thought his chances had passed in winning the Serie A title. And, you know, it's good to see that. I think he, you know, he's kind of like under no illusions. It's, and has been for quite some time, that this is all over. Bar the shouting, you know, even being denied mathematically yesterday, the realistically champions anyway, you know, even if they lose the next six, you know, and Lazio to win the next six, there's still a hell of a goal difference to overturn there. No, they are effectively champions, if not mathematical. But yeah, anything less than a Lazio victory on Wednesday evening, I think they're playing, and it's over before Napoli get to kick a ball. But yeah, I hope Napoli, you know, can get over the line on the pitch as well.
Is there something unsatisfactory about winning when you're sitting at home watching it on the television? You know, we were doing the decades thing the other day about Derby County being on the beach in Mallorca when they won the first division in 72. I don't know. You want to be there. You want to be on the pitch. You want to have the fans with you. You want to have all that stuff going on. You know, the proper celebration, I think.
You do. You want to be, you know, to push your cart over the line yourself. And don't get me wrong, winning the league title is still a great thing and all that. You know, you But if you could be picky enough to choose how to do it, then yeah, you want to get over the finish line under your own steam rather than being pushed over by, you know, the results of someone else's. Talking of success, and it might still be a title success for them, Dave, Ipswich Town and their prospects for next season.
Yeah, we spoke about Ipswich, gosh, I think going back to November or something earlier in the season. They looked like they were putting something together. Of course, they clinched promotion at the weekend, as did Plymouth, from League One to the Championship. But the Ipswich thing has been absolutely phenomenal over the last 2.5 months of the season. They've won 13 and drawn 1 of their games. They've taken 40 points from 14 games. They've scored, I think it's 42 goals in that period. I think the goal difference for the season at the minute is over 60. They were a decent side up until sort of Christmas, New Year, but since this run's kicked in mid-February, I think it was, when they started, I mean, they have been absolutely ridiculous. They scored 40-odd goals while conceding two in those 14 games. I mean, that is, you talk about momentum and taking yourself to the titles. I mean, that is just extraordinary performance from which, because, you know, going back to February, they drew at Bristol Rovers in an away game 0-0. And at that point, they dropped down to fourth and people were saying, no, it's going to be the playoffs and consigning themselves to that. And this run that they've had is absolutely insane. And I think what it does is it sets them up for the Championship very nicely, the momentum that they've got. Because I think if you can put a run together like that, it says lots and lots of things about you as a team and as a club. I mean, it's not just that you're a decent team, but when you can do that under the pressure of knowing that you've got no room for error, really, at that point, you know, you've got to keep winning. And you know, let's not forget that the Sheffield Wednesday are on 93 points and have kept Plymouth and Ipswich Honest right to the end. And Barnsley could end up with 90 points, I think, at the end of the season. But to score 99 goals in 45 games, to have put together that kind of run, I think that puts you in really good stead for the season to come in the Championship. Because I think what you've got there, you know, there's been a lot of fuss today about Leeds United and their players not paying any attention to kids in the hotel on before the game at the weekend and all that sort of stuff. And at that club at the minute, having had all that momentum that they had with Bielsa, and it was a really positive place, it's now become a negative one. And I think what Ipswich have got is that really positive feel they've got, you know, within the community. Everybody wants to be involved in Ipswich Town again, you know, for the first time probably in about 25 years, when they got in the Premier League in the Marcus Stewart era when they qualified for Europe. Now everybody is back on side, everybody's interested, everybody's excited. And they've got a really good manager and a really good way of playing. Kieran McKenna was Solskjaer's assistant at Manchester United. He's gone down to Ipswich's first managerial job. And in the 18 months he's been there, he's transformed the club, you know, which isn't to say that he hasn't had help, because Ipswich have spent decent money. But what they've done is they've spent it in the right way. I mean, it's one thing having money. The other thing is using it to build a proper team. And, you know, when they've needed to, they've added in exactly the right way. You know, in January in particular, they brought in Nathan Broadhead, who was a product of the Everton Academy. Never had a real chance at Everton. And he's come in and been a revelation. He's played for Wales now as well, scored the goal in Croatia when they got the draw on his debut. He's done great. Harry Clark, who was a kid at Ipswich, which went away to the Arsenal Academy, he's come back in January and added something to it. But they've got good players there, you know, already. Leif Davis, they brought in from Leeds in the summer, product of their academy. He's been fantastic down the left-hand side. They've got a really good way of playing. It's a sort of a 3-4-3 of sorts, but it's a very mobile side, you know, very modern-looking team. And, you know, you look at the Championship this year, and Sunderland, of course, only came up on through the playoffs last year. So it's not always the team that wins the league that ends up having the best season the following year in the higher division. So Sunderland came through with momentum last year, and I think Ipswich will come through with the same sort of momentum this season. It's a club where everything seems to be pointing in the right direction, and that there's an enormous power in that. You know, the foundation that the football and the community thing as was, that's really popular with the supporters. That's doing great work in the community. You know, the media stuff is going through the roof, the amount of stuff that they put out and the response to it. The team on the pitch is delivering everything. 29,000 people there again yesterday. They've had over 600,000 people through the turnstiles at Ipswich this season in the league, which, you know, they probably would have took two seasons to do that over the last few years in League One. It's just one of those ones where they've lit the touch paper and it's now going through the roof. And not that I'm a betting man, but I would suggest possibly a fiver on them to get promoted again next season wouldn't go amiss.
Yeah, I've seen quite a few teams over the years like going up from, you know, third tier to second tier and prospering straight away. Sheffield United, I think, did back-to-back promotions. I remember Wigan Athletic doing very similar. I think they spent 2 years in the second tier and then went up. there was a rash of teams. There was a run of them at one point where, you know, Norwich City under Paul Lambert was another one off the top of my head. Is that, yes, you know, that gap between the top of League One and the entirety of the Championship, you know, isn't that huge. You do get teams who go up and struggle, and it tends to be teams struggling to go up. They go up and struggle to score goals, basically, I think, is often the case. But this Ipswich team should not struggle with that in any way, shape or form. Freddie Ladapo, Connor Chaplin, even the contributions of George Hurst and Nathan Broadhead, you know, the goals from midfield, Marcus Harness and, you know, Wes Burns, even defenders chipping in with goals. I think that's the impressive thing, is that they've got goals coming in from all angles, basically. You know, everyone's chipping in with goals there. They're not noticeably... Yes, they have those two strikers who scored a lot of goals, but they're not left to it by any means. You know, you're not looking at a set of stats there that suggests that, well, if they struggle to make that step up to the next division, where else are the goals going to come from? You know, and presumably Ipswich will reinforce as well as part of that. Yeah, I fully, you know, and I think it's good as well. I mean, what's happened at Ipswich as well? You know, that job that's been done this season, it can't really be underestimated. I mean, this is the fourth season down in the third tier. You know, the last 3 years, read 11th, 9th, and 11th. You know, the last three seasons that they had in the Championship before relegation, smacked of you know, regression and decay, 16th, 12th, and then finishing bottom in 2018-19. So, you know, for Ipswich to go into this season and do this is massively impressive on the back of what have been, you can't suggest anything otherwise than six very stale years. And it's difficult for teams of repute to go into that third tier. And Sunderland did it. They were stuck in there for a few years. Sheffield United were stuck in there for a few years. So to be a team that I think a lot of people know of better days for them, to find it difficult to get out of that division, you know, it is that potential stepping stone to say, well, look, you know, we finally cracked that, and the next division's not going to be all that hard. We will certainly not look out of place in that. And I don't think Ipswich will be looking out of place in the Championship next season. And the revival for them is long overdue. I mean, you look at the list of recent seasons, you know, since they were, you know, dropped out of the Premier League, you know, 21 years ago now, frighteningly. You know, they had initial seasons where they were challenging for playoff places, did reach the playoffs 2004 and 2005 again. But since 2005, you know, they only reached the Championship playoffs once. That's been a significant era, you know, over a decade and a half of frustration and regression at Portman Road, Dave. You know, so I think getting this promotion, I can't see them letting go of that that kind of, you know, after all of that frustration and hard labour, basically, not to reap more from what are good times at the minute.
I think as well, we've just been talking about Napoli trying to get over the line. I think the really impressive thing about Ipswich is once they got to that position where they were top two and it was in their own hands, they've absolutely throttled it. You know, it's very easy to, you get into that position and then that's when the pressure comes in. Oh my God, it all sort of falls apart. But they went to Peterborough and won 3-0. Now, Peterborough are in the running for the playoffs. They went to Barnsley on last Tuesday night, and Barnsley have had a fantastic run. They still had an outside chance of getting in the top two. They won 3-0 at Barnsley. Then you come to the final home game of the season, you know, you win and you go up. Now, that's a recipe for screwing it up and, you know, having a terrible day. And they were 5-0 up at half time. Now, that's not just seizing the day, that's absolutely strangling it. And I think if you can do that, if you've got not just that momentum, but if you've got that mentality that, right, it feels like a club where this is our time kind of thing. You know, this is our moment, and we're not going to let go of this. Now, you know, obviously the Championship is a tougher league, but I don't think it's massively tougher. They've got a lot of good young players there. You know, Davies is a young player, Broadhead's young player. Hurst, if he comes back on loan again from Leicester is young Sari Clark, young Christian Walton's a relatively young goalkeeper, but with plenty of experience. So it's a strong side right the way through. They've got a bit of experience, Sam Morsi, the captain, and Massimo Luongo alongside him in midfield. They've been really good over the last sort of 2 or 3 months, steadying everything down. They've got a lot of the right things in place, and you know, there's a good ownership group from America that is the major shareholder. They've put money in when it's been needed to. You know, in January, I think Broadhead was a couple of million quid, which at League One is, you know, not an insubstantial amount of money. But equally, at 22, 23, great investment for the future. You know, they've got a kid called Cam Humphreys who's come through the team this season from the youth team. He's going to play in the Premier League, either with Ipswich in 2 or 3 years' time, or he's going to make him a seven-figure sum, you know, in 2 or 3 years' time. So they've got kids coming through from the academy and making a difference as well. So, you know, I think they'll shake the Championship up next season. Whether they, you know, it depends which teams come down and how well they survive and all of that from the Premier League. But I think they can cause some real problems. I mean, they played Burnley in the FA Cup and took Burnley to the, you know, to extra time at Turf Moor in the replay. Vincent Kompany was very complimentary about them. So, I mean, that says something about the level that they can play at. So I think they'll cause some problems next year.
Yeah, I think completely. I think what's quite telling is that, you know, when Kieran McKenna, you know, is grounded at Manchester United, you know, he was one of the assistants there as well. And, you know, say picking up, you know, players from you know, backgrounds at Arsenal and, you know, Everton, you know, yeah, despite Everton's problems, they're still, you know, a long-term top-flight football club that have a, you know, a really great record of producing players. It's dried up a bit, you know, they're not as prolific as they were, but they, you know, they had a fine track record of unearthing talent and you know, and producing it and bringing it along, you know. So to have that kind of, I don't know, the people of with a substantial background, you know, that have learned good habits elsewhere to bring into the club as well, you know, I think that bodes really well for them. But yeah, I totally, it's going to be interesting to see how Ipswich do next season. But yeah, I can't see them struggling, and you know, I certainly see no reason why they can't be pushing, certainly to be on the edge of the playoffs, if not gate crashing them completely. And yeah, you know, and it's always great to see Ipswich and Norwich in the same division as well. You know, it's one of the, you know, it's one of the eye-catching derby matches of any football calendar. And again, you know, it's interesting, Norwich came down from the Premier League, and it's that concept of just how quick football can change as well. You know, you look at Norwich, who were in the Premier League last season. Ipswich, you know, having those, you know, the labours of the third tier, and now they're back in the same division. You know, it is fascinating how, you know, similarities to kind of like Southampton and Portsmouth in that respect. They're now kind of like, you know, Portsmouth in the Premier League and Southampton were down in the third, and then within about 3 years, it was Portsmouth in the fourth and you know, Southampton back in the top. You know, it is fascinating just how those relationships between kind of like, you know, rival clubs that are so indelibly entwined can shift so volatilely. And here come Ipswich. Looking forward to seeing how they do next season in a division that, yeah, is shaping up to be, you know, a magnificently deranged finish. A week today. We're recording on Monday, Bank Holiday Monday. Next Monday's our extra bank holiday for royal patronage circumstances. But I'll take an extra day of football, if not doffing my cap towards the royal family. But yeah, you know, it's going to be a fascinating match. As we speak, Blackburn Rovers are in action at home to Luton Town, currently goalless. But they are likely to be into the mix of it, just looking at the league table again now. And yeah, if they can, I don't know, at least avoid defeat, if they can take a point, if they win today, then they're into the top six with a game to play. They will dislodge Millwall if they can to snatch that win. Not so easy. Easier said than done against the Luton Town side that have played some wonderful football and are going to enter the playoffs with that kind of like third place finish, which, you know, can be a bit of a millstone round the neck of the team. But next Monday, that's the fascinating set of games, because as things stand, you're looking at, you know, two playoff places being fought over by five teams. You know, Coventry are currently fifth on 69. It's Millwall hanging in on sixth on 68. Could be usurped by Blackburn tonight. Sunderland and West Brom, your West Brom, are in there as well. Looking at the fixtures next Monday, it is Millwall at home to Blackburn. So that's going to be absolutely massive. The two going head to head at what I still call the new Den. Middlesbrough are hosting Coventry. So again, no easy ride for Coventry there. Sunderland take the trip to Preston. L 1937 FA Cup final, ICO, I think I can call that one. And West Brom go to Swansea. So, you know, it's, if anything, looking on paper, you know, West Brom, you've got the easiest task there. You know, I think there's a, you know, half a hope that everyone else can fall flat in the face and you come through there, Dave.
You look at Millwall and Blackburn, and they've both tried their very best to throw it all out over the course of the last 3 or 4 weeks, because they were both in great position. And Blackburn, I think, have taken 4 points from the last 5 games, 4 draws and a defeat. Millwall lost 3 games out of 4 before they won again at the weekend. I mean, Coventry, you know, when they won at the weekend, everybody thought, oh, yeah, great, Coventry are there. I mean, Coventry have got a fair chance of not getting through. I mean, Middlesbrough, who were also stuttering there, but from Middlesbrough's perspective, it doesn't really matter because they'd already qualified for the playoff. So, I mean, it's not so much of a stutter. It's a, well, perhaps we're resting people and, you know, whatever for the playoff. So I think it's going to be one of those days where goal difference is going to come into it. I mean, my favourites for it all would be Sunderland, I think, because I think they'll win at Preston and that gets them to 69. And then can Coventry get a point as well, you know, against Middlesbrough to get up? And Millwall Blackburn, I mean, that looks like a draw all day long to me. So it's going to be one of those with the slide rule and the calculator. And
yeah, there's definitely going to be a heavy... There's definitely going to be a lot of that. There's going to be a lot of leapfrog going along there. I mean, the one saving grace for Blackburn Rovers is that there's shades of 91-92 in that poor run that they've had of late. Even under Dalglish, 91-92, you know, they'd seemed hell-bent on automatic promotion, then hit the skids, were on the brink of missing out on the playoffs, did sneak into the playoffs and then won the playoffs. You know, it's a different Blackburn Rovers, you know, to what that was. But, you know, there are similarities, there are parallels to be drawn to events of 30 years ago. But yeah, I mean, when you're looking at those fixtures, though, I think there's a case to be made for the failure of everyone,
yeah,
more than the success of everyone, in a way. That isn't an easy set of games by any means of the imagination, even when you're looking at Preston. Like I say, on paper, you know, I hate to kind of like put that pressure on you there, Dave, but you know, you've got the fixture that looks, you know, on paper, the best of the bunch.
But I mean, going back to what we were saying at the start about Tottenham, if ever I've wanted my money back from an Albion game, 2 or 3 of them have been at Swansea. I can tell you that. I've been absolutely abject at Swansea on a number of occasions in my supporting lifetime. So, well, of course, the great promotion in '93 came from beating Swansea in the playoffs over 2 legs. I mean, it is one of those where you can make a case for them all blowing it, and you can make a case for Morgan. I would love to see Coventry in there, because I think for their supporters, for the last, I don't know, how many years, is it 10, 15 years, it's just been one piece of bad news after another, after another, after another. And for them, I would love to see them come through and get a chance at going back to the Premier League. And that really would be something, Coventry, or Luton, actually, for that matter, getting back to the Premier League. I mean, they'd both be nice stories. But I mean, amongst the others, you know, they're such a weird selection of fixtures. It really could go anywhere. I think it is going to be one of those where 5 minutes before the final whistle, one team is in sixth, and then three other teams it'll be like a revolving door over the course of the last 5 or 10 minutes of the game, I think. I don't know.
So certainly, I think even if you're a gambling man, you just couldn't really kind of like back anyone with any great certainty there. Yeah, like you say, even Coventry at 3 points clear of seventh place Sunderland, you know, that is massively precarious. You know, the fact that, you know, if Blackburn Rovers do pick off a result today against Luton, then the seventh place team is going to be on 68. So that sense of peril for a Coventry would be even more pronounced. That's, you know, it is going to be a stunning finish. And there are, of course, still a, you know, small matter of a relegation place to go down with Blackpool and Wigan. Between what is now going to be Reading or Huddersfield, but Huddersfield still have a game in hand, so yeah, that could be over by all over by the one before that game takes place next Monday. But as well, to throw into the mix, it's fascinating that on the same day there's a cluster of Premier League relegation games that will dictate play a part in who's going to be going down in place of at least one of those teams that we've just mentioned towards the top end of the Championship. Leicester go to Fulham at 3 p.m, which is the same kickoff time as all the games finishing in the Championship. Everton are at Brighton at 5:30, and then Southampton are at Forest at 8 p.m. Southampton looking doomed now, but it's still wide open as far as the other two places going down are concerned. You know, I think we've all kind of like made our guesses and second guesses in this. Going back a couple of months now, and I'd just like to give a big heads up to how Bournemouth have kind of like pulled themselves
around.
Absolutely,
yeah.
You know, it's stunning. You know, Chris Lepkowski put, I think it was me and Matthew Gibbs on the spot too, and we did a relegation chat a few months ago, a month or so ago, maybe 2 months ago, over who would go down. And I think I had Bournemouth nailed on to go down at that point in time because they weren't getting the results. They were making bad decisions. And, you know, I think but even then, I think I said it was with no, you know, complete authority,
yeah,
because it was so wide open at the time. But, you know, it would come down to, you know, the teams making the worst decisions. I think my selection was Southampton, Bournemouth and Leeds at that point in time. I think I still got a chance of 2 out of 3 there. But yeah, Dave, that cluster of games, that trio of games is going to be fascinating watching as well.
What's going to be interesting is which of those clubs who changed their manager got it right. Because I think, you know, if you look at all those teams in the bottom half of the division, I mean, I fancy Crystal Palace to go down the week before they sacked Vieira and brought Roy Hodgson in. So that was obviously quite a good decision from their perspective. And as you say, Gary O'Neill's done wonders at Bournemouth. But he had the season to do it in, which I think is the crucial thing. You know, I think if you are going to change your manager, the earlier you do it, you know, sort of Christmas time is the thing. Because, I mean, has it really made any difference to Leeds changing the manager? Not really. Has it made much difference to Leicester? Has it even made any real difference to Everton? Well, it doesn't look like it at the minute, does it? So, you know, I think if you're gonna have your surgery, then you need to do it nice and early. But next Monday is going to be monumental. I would like to see Forest beat Southampton and stay up because, you know, I think it's an interesting story, Forest. And I do like Steve Cooper and what he's tried to do there. But as you've said before, you know, the idea that nobody who's got promoted is going to go down just seems too ridiculously far-fetched for words. I mean, it's just against the natural order of how football always works. So, I mean, you have to start thinking that with Bournemouth and Fulham nice and safe, you have to start thinking that Forest have got to go. But, I mean, you know, Leicester-Everton tonight, after we've recorded this, that's going to play a big part. But as you say, when we get to next Monday,
The fascinating thing about tonight's game between Leicester and Everton is that it doesn't kind of save either of them. Whoever gets a positive result out of any of that tonight is still faced with, you know, this huge night next Monday. You know, that's the situation they're in. Forest, yeah, you know, that it is that nagging quirk that, yeah, you three teams promoted, you're not getting it. I don't want even to be able to tell you the last time such an occurrence happened. I think it happened early 2000s or late 90s or something like that. You know, it's something that, you know, might have not even happened since then. I mean, so the law of averages, it does have to happen at some point.
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah.
You know, and I agree, it would be great if it was this year because, you know, Forest for so long down, it's a bit like kind of like willing Coventry on to go up or Luton Town. You know, they've been away for so long, they were a staple of the 80s in the top flight, and, you know, I always will those type of teams go on. I mean, as far as Leicester and Everton were concerned, that was a fantastic weekend for them to see Southampton from one up at half time at Newcastle to lose out, Forest to be one up with 8 minutes to go to lose 2-1, Leeds to lose at Bournemouth. You know, it couldn't have been a better weekend for the two teams that play tonight. But yeah, Forest having that win against Brighton, I think a lot of this it's making as few bad decisions as possible and being in the right place at the right time as well. You know, it's because I felt the other night Forest were in the perfect place to be taking on Brighton 3 days after they just lost an FA Cup semi-final on penalties. It was the ideal time to walk into a game against Brighton at that point in time. And there'll be other fixtures like that on the horizon, you know, in the coming weeks where, you know, it's just the right time to play that team that are in mid-table and probably on the beach. You know, or it's just the right time to play that team that are, you know, maybe it's a Tottenham or something like that. I'd have to find out the fixture list and has anyone got a Tottenham coming up. But yeah, it's, you know, it just makes next Monday such a fascinating day of football with the Championship coming to its conclusion. Though that epic battle of five fighting out for two places in the playoffs, still potentially maybe one to go down, depending on how Huddersfield do in midweek. And then that trio of Premier League games as teams battle to fend off the drop. It's such a structurally fascinating day, Dave.
Yeah, and as well, I mean, the interesting thing is with the Premier League ones, especially, is the games are staggered. I mean, you know, in days of old, they would all be kicking off at the same time and all of that. But if you're Leicester now, you play the 3 o'clock game and you go to Fulham. Now, if Leicester can win that game at Fulham, you would say it's one of their better fixtures that's left, because Fulham are kind of in the middle and that's their season's broadly over, I suppose, to a degree. If Leicester could win that, it really ratchets up the pressure on Everton going to Brighton. And of course, Brighton are still in the running for European football. They've got plenty to play for. It just seems impossible that Everton are going to go down. But I don't know, it's creeping ever closer, isn't it? It really is. I would not want to be an Everton fan at the minute. I really wouldn't.
No, it's and yeah, I hope Paul McPowell's not listening or at this one. But then again, that's the oddity of this type of battle. You know, if they go to Leicester and pick up a positive result, and there you've got Leeds going to Manchester City on Saturday, where they are very much going to take nothing other than a sound thrashing. Yeah, it 90 minutes can make such a difference. But you know, Leicester City, you know, win tonight, win against, was it they're playing Fulham? You know, that they could be kind of like 6 points. That's 6 points. They're up onto 35 points. They could be out of the equation by this time next week if they pick up two wins there in what, well, you'd have to suggest the two games that are there to win. No disrespect to Fulham, who've played some wonderful football this season, but Fulham at the minute, you know, they had a bit of a downturn after losing that FA Cup quarter final at Manchester United. I think they lost the next four in the league, but then went to Goodison and won. And they've given Manchester City a reasonable game as well at the weekend. And, you know, again, teams like that, you know, are in that mid-table. It's just like, you know, which version of them are going to show up for that particular fixture? You know, are they going to want to fight tooth and nail? Are they up for it? Are they just kind of like, you know, going through the motions and just waiting, ticking down till the summer? But yeah, next Monday's going to be, you know, an absolutely epic night of football, a day of football there. Which is kind of like makes tonight Everton versus Everton's trip to Leicester it's the springboard going into that far as those Premier League games are concerned, because, you know, all of them happen on the Monday. I think you can discount Leeds taking any points on Saturday at Manchester City. It's this one tonight is the springboard into that wild one in 7 days' time, and then the Championship as well. Don't be going anywhere on Monday. Just stay in, put your feet up. You know, and if you've not got the Sky and BT subscriptions, then get it on the radio, and I'm sure you can find a feed out there that'll supply the games for you as well, by other means, shall we say.
Yeah, I mean, the other one that's interesting, you know, West Ham looked like they were safe a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
And they've had a couple of reverses. Now they're playing at Man City and then at home to Man United in the next two games after that. I mean, they could still, in theory, be dragged back into it if they were to lose those two. I don't know. If I was putting money on it, I would say Leeds are the next most likely to go of them all. But I don't know. I really
it's that rabbit out of the hat scenario, though, isn't it? It's kind of like, you know, someone somewhere, whether that's Everton or Leeds or Forest or Leicester. Now, Leicester, you look at Leicester and you think such a false position for them to be in. Even looking at the goal difference of minus 13 compared to kind of like Forest minus 32 and Everton's minus 25. You know, you look at the players that they've got at their disposal. You know, Jamie Vardy's just scored a goal for the first time in 6 months. Now, is that the springboard he needs to score another half a dozen before the last whistle's blown on the season? James Maddison, Ian Acho, you know, Harvey Barnes. They've got talent there that the other teams around them haven't, but it's still no guarantee that they'll not, you know, conspire against themselves. Yeah, West Ham are fascinating, though, that I watched that game against Crystal Palace. And that was the one really that they needed to be going for. That would have put them on 37 points, which would have made them as safe as Wolves and Palace themselves were at that point in time. What I'm looking at there is 34 points still seems precarious. And yes, they've got those two games coming up against the Manchester clubs. But, you know, I'm looking at kind of Leeds and Everton and thinking there's just no way you two are going to make 34 points. You know, Leicester maybe, you know, Forest as well. I can't really see it. I think West Ham are just in that position now where, 34 points doesn't sound so healthy. That fixture list looks very difficult. You've got your European games, but there will be at least, you know, three teams worse than they are come the end of the season. It's, for me, that bottom of the Premier League, it's just a case of which two. I think Leicester will get out of it just because I think they've got too much talent in the squad. Although, you know, so for me, it's kind of like who stays up and who goes down. One from Leeds, Forest and Everton. But it's going to be, going to be fascinating.
Yeah, I think Leeds will go just because they feel like that team that's got the negative momentum, if there's such a thing. They feel like that team that's just starting to drop now. And
they do. They feel like they've got that anchor, don't they? They're making bad decisions, which, you know, I can see Leeds going. It might be a toss of the coin between Everton and Forest. Can Forest summon up some... Interesting, like Forest, I think they play Arsenal at home on the penultimate weekend, which that could be an Arsenal that are just kind of like shoulders slumped by them. It's, you look at Everton's fixture list, the fact that they can't score goals, you know, if they pull themselves out of this, then it's a serious achievement by Sean Dyche because of that lack of goals, because of that fixture list. Now, three of the last five are away from home. One of the home games that they've got remaining is Manchester City. You do kind of cringe for them when you come to look at that fixture list, and, you know, you come to look at the stats and the fact that they can't find goals. There's so much resting on Dominic Calvert-Lewin, but he's only just come back from extensive injury. You know, it tends to take half a dozen games for a player to get back to that kind of level of match sharpness, and the season's going to be over by then. You know, it's precarious times for Everton. But again, you know, a bit like looking at those final fixtures in the Championship and finding a reason for everyone to kind of fail in the targets. I think you look at the bottom end of the Premier League there, and again, there's reasons for every single one of them, Leicester included, to conspire against themselves.
Well, it won't be dawn next Monday. I think we can say.
No, it is. It is going to be one of the, it's going to be one of the most intriguing days of football in quite some time. I think, you know, we always have this type of thing towards the end of the season, but I think the way that those, you know, you're looking at five battling over two playoff places in the Championship, and you're looking at, you know, you're perming two from four at the bottom of the Premier League. And it's on each kind of basis there, on each, you know, the top end of the Championship, the bottom end of the Premiership, it truly is anyone's guess.
Yeah, absolutely. It would be interesting if, you know, if it ended up being the teams that had stuck with the manager that survived. That'd be yes, quite something, I think.
Yeah, that would be. I mean, that's in a way, you know, West Ham with David Moyes in that respect. I mean, I'd spoken to David Moyes about a month ago, and, you know, West Ham kind of stuck by him, not necessarily by choice, but I applauded West Ham in the fact that they didn't do what Leeds did or what Leicester did and kind of like, let's sack the manager. Oh, now what do we do? They, you know, it seems like West Ham have looked around, you know, seriously considered getting shut of David Moyes, but looking around and thinking, actually, who do we realistically kind of like give the job to at this point in time and who would take it? And they've stuck rather than twisted. You know, and again, you know, West Ham, that's, you know, a fascinating one in the fact that, you know, I think the consensus amongst West Ham fans is, you know, thanks for the memories, off you go. He might well leave them having won their first major trophy in 43 years. It's, and again, that all of that just ties into what has been, it's a very different environment at the bottom of that Premier League this season. Given that, you know, you look at last season and many other seasons before, last season as the barometer for this one, being that Norwich and Watford were down already. You know, not mathematically, but realistically, it was essentially three teams, you know, fighting to avoid that one last place down. This is very different because, you know, you've only really got Southampton who look out of it now. Four from two, but it could easily be five. Two from five if West Ham. If those rabbit out the hat results are picked off by a Forest or a Leeds or an Everton, suddenly West Ham are back in it. But yeah, utterly fascinated and looking forward to both tonight's game and what occurs across we're looking at 15 games next Monday that all, you know, have something interesting, or certainly those top four in the Championship. There's seven games there that just have so much riding on them. But thanks for being on, Dave. Skeleton crew have come through, and we've managed to do an hour and 11 minutes there, which is completely unexpected. But yeah, thanks for being available, Dave.
Well, thanks for hosting and for being at the other end of the two biscuit tins and a bit of string.
A joy as always. All I can be left with is to say thank you for listening to today's Football Times from These Football Times. I've been Stephen Scragg. He's been Dave Bowler.
It's good night from me.
And it's good night from him. Good night.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.